Here's a show about noisy attractions like shooting galleries. So let's begin on a quieter note, someplace possibly more civilized, like maybe Canada.
Don't go, don't go, don't go, don't go. Thank you very much. Chris Williamson, Bonnie Yates, Tret Fjord, Teresa Troll, Jennifer Berezan, Barbara Gordon, and Deirdre McCalla.
This is it. This is the real thing. You've heard about it on the radio and seen it in the papers. 10 big acts for the price of one ticket. Behind this curtain, you'll see the Fiji mermaid, the giant red bat, the 6-foot man-eating chicken. They're all real and they're all on the inside. You'll see the Ethiopian glass eater.
What are you waiting for? Admission is free to Bellycast, the podcast of the carnival and sideshow. You're just in time. We're going to have a free show. We're going to bring out the strange people, the weird people. Here they come now. Watch the doorway. You'll see what they do. You'll hear what they talk about. They're all alive on the inside. Get your ticket and come in.
Bellycast presents news and interviews with performers and showmen. Some important words of warning. This podcast is not family friendly. I'm not even thinking about it. So listen at your own risk. The performances and stunts described are not safe even for experienced performers. Never attempt them without the direct supervision of someone who already performs them. Please use your common sense, and if you don't have any, stop listening now.
Here's your host, Wayne Kaiser.
Welcome to Bellycast, episode 207. It's free for showmen, performers, and fans of the sideshow, carnival, and variety arts. The feature segment of today's show, Shooting Galleries. Look out, you're going to hit one of the listeners and the fat ladies and gentlemen of the sideshow.
They ask me how much I weigh. I tell them a slight lie. 712 pounds.
Also, news, a favorite carnival food recipe, and much more. I shot the sheriff, and I might just shoot the deputy, too. It's Bellycast.
Here we go. Keep your hands and arms inside the car and remain seated until the ride comes to a complete stop.
As you know, I often begin with a note about who's died recently. This time I have two. Dolly Parton. Nuff said, she looked like America when the country was trying to be what it promised to be. The other is not a who, it's a what. Columbia House. You remember, the company that would send you a dozen LPs or cassettes for a penny if you'd agree to buy a certain number of recordings from them in coming months.
The Columbia Record and Tape Club can help you get a lot more music.
Every time you go.
Just find our ad. It's in your Sunday paper. Pick any 11 records or tapes for a penny and see how to get even more music free. Bruce Springsteen, Madonna, Dire Straits, Phil Collins, hundreds more. All the music you love. The Columbia Record and Tape Club. No one else gives you so much for so little. 11 albums, 1 cent. Find our ad in Sunday's paper, take it to your mailbox. You'll get a lot more music. You'll get a lot more life. Look in your Sunday paper and favorite magazines.
Sounds like a great deal, right? The problem? So many problems. Top of the list, they'd send out flyers every month, and you had to respond to the month's mailing rejecting the listed offering, or you'd get it and be charged. They were often defrauded by kids who had no intention of paying, since the post office will deliver to your address no matter whose name is on the package, even if it's addressed to Mickey Mouse. Again and again, name after name. And the company pressed their own records cheaply, so they didn't sound as good, and they didn't get written licenses to make and sell their records, and they only paid the artists 75% of their full royalties. Gone, but not missed. Oh, and by the way, in case you were wondering what the jerk in the Oval Office is going to do next, Well, he won't be releasing the Epstein files, but it looks like he has another idea.
We are privileged to be living at the time of the most astonishing event. The Emperor has undergone a transformation, a metamorphosis. He has become a god. Now that is unusual, to say the least. But that's the nature of miracles, to be unusual. And if it's the nature of some people not to believe in them, well, the more fool them.
Now, on to shooting galleries.
Bring the fun of the famous carnival shooter game home with the Magic Shot Shooting Gallery from Ideal. Setup is simple. Just drop the metal balls into the gallery once and start shooting. Inside the box, you'll get the magnetic shooter, 25 metal balls, the enclosed gallery with 12 targets to shoot at, and instructions to get you started. Simply grab your shooter and start firing. Ring the bell, take the ramp, and flip the targets. Ideal's Magic Shot Shooting Gallery is recommended for ages 5 and older.
Not really that, I mean this. Firing ranges are now popular recreational facilities for people who own guns, and sometimes you can even rent guns there for a bit of target practice. Shooting galleries were once popular hands-on entertainments for grown-ups at fairs and even beach boardwalks. You could shoot at targets for practice or to win prizes.
Step right up here, soldier. Are you a good shot?
Yeah, I'm a good shot.
Well, let's find out. Shoot the red star entirely off this little card. Win your choice. Any of these prizes here. 200 shots, just $2.
And, of course, you could brag to your buddies who were there with you or show off to your girlfriend. Maybe you'd like to use one of these if your mother would let you.
What does a pilot do in an emergency like this? He's trained by the Air Force and given the finest equipment to survive. Equipment like this real Fairchild survival rifle, approved by SAC, the Strategic Air Command. Now Post offers you this special full-size plastic model of the SAC survival rifle. It looks exactly like the real one. Same size, over 30 inches long. It comes apart like the real one. The barrel and trigger sections fit inside the plastic stock. It floats in water like the real one. It ejects play cartridges just like the real gun. To get your survival rifle, get these special boxes of Post Toasties and Post Grape Nuts Flakes. Get the box with the pilot on the back and follow the easy direction. Send for your model survival rifle right away.
Now here's a new product I'm sure you'll like. Show 'em whatever you got. From legendary showman Aaron Brill comes this plan for a small trailer show. Do you have a giant turtle or a midget horse, a freak animal, or a strange human to show? This compact show will hold whatever you have and bring in the cash in just a few front feet of midway space. 6 pages in PDF format emailed to you, just $10. Get this and rake in the dough. The link to purchase this file is on this episode's webpage.
Oh my god, just take my money now!
Sharp left turn. If you're old enough, you might remember Tijuana Bibles. They were definitely not holy books. They were illegal at the time. A long time ago, porn of any kind was not widely available. You could find it, but you couldn't buy it. Not over the counter, anyway. There were silly imitations like X-ray specs, glasses that let you imagine you were seeing people naked, but they were just an illusion. Tijuana Bibles were porn of a sort from the 1930s, tiny 3x4-inch booklets, just one panel per page for 8 pages and stapled. I doubt that anyone would find them truly erotic. You'd mostly see them at your friends' houses and chuckle over the images of popular characters of the day doing naughty things. These were the first comics in America to do more than simply reprint old newspaper strips. The name Tijuana Bible comes from the supposed source, but the best place to get one of them was the local burlesque house, or cigar store, or barber shop. Or if you came by any, you could trade them with your friends. At the time, they cost maybe 50 cents. There were straight and a few lesbian versions. At the 1939 World's Fair, employees secretly sold Tijuana Bibles at some of the rides for 25 cents. They were tailed by the police to the Brooklyn Navy Yard, where 350,000 copies and several printing plates were confiscated. In 1942, New York City police and the FBI raided a comics warehouse in the South Bronx and reportedly seized 8 million of them, like the authorities had nothing better to worry about. No one knows who wrote or drew them, but Will Eisner, creator of the masked crime fighter The Spirit, was working in a New York City printing shop where he remembers a guy straight out of the mob who offered him a job drawing Tijuana Bibles for $3 per page. That's in Depression-era money. It would be about $60 now. Eisner politely turned down the offer. Still, these silly little comics stayed popular until the coming of magazines like Playboy in 1955, and then the popularity of 8-pages quickly declined. What happened to these old booklets? It's estimated that there were between 700 and 1,000 of them published. There's a whole library of them online, and the link to find them is on the episode webpage. If you look there, you can see a couple of full examples, not just the covers. You don't need those things. Brooke Shields was 15 at the time she made this ad, and you can always let your mind drift and imagine what this implied in 1980.
I've got 7 Calvins in my closet. And if they could talk, I'd be ruined.
You want to know what comes between me and my Calvins? Nothing.
Calvin Klein Jeans.
Just below San Diego, Tijuana, land of broken dreams, señoritas dancing in the moonlight, flashing Spanish dark eyes. Everyone it seems. They say, hey gringo, can you take us across the border? Tell them I'm your daughter. Poco loco. Down the back streets, through the alleys, all the young men stand with pride. They guard the palace to the kingdom called Tijuana. Their heritage they decide. They say, hey gringo, can you take us across the border? We'll work by just Iguata on the other side.
I wonder if any of those were put into the crypt of civilization. that is a 2,000 cubic foot time capsule built in 1940 at Oglethorpe University in Georgia. And it will, well, it's supposed to be opened in the year 8113. At least that's how it was designed. The project was inspired by the opening of the Egyptian pyramids, so they designed this repository of everyday 1930s objects. The vault was sealed as well as they could and filled with nitrogen against deterioration. Guinness considers this to be the first genuine attempt to permanently preserve a record of 20th century culture for people thousands of years in the future. Maybe if they put some of those Tijuana Bibles in there, people in 8113 would get a better idea of how we really were. None of us will be around then, but imagine the day when they find those. Calm down, calm down.
The look of love is in your eyes. A look, your smile can't disguise. The look of love, it's saying so much more than just words could ever say. And what my heart has heard, well, it takes my breath away. I can hardly wait to hold you, feel my arms around you. How long I have waited, waited just to love you. Now that I've found you, you've got the look of love. It's on your face, the look, the time can't erase. Be mine tonight. Let this be just the start of so many nights like this. Let's take a lover's vow and then seal it with a kiss. Wait to hold you, feel my arms around you. How long I have waited, waited just to love you. Now that I have found you, don't ever go, don't ever go. I love you so.
subscribe to Ballycast and join the human oddities and a few just plain folks privileged to see behind the curtain of the sideshow, freak show, and variety arts of all kinds. You'll hear stories of famous performers, past and present, interviews with brave and skilled artists, and ideas you can use for your own acts. You'll find links on the webpage at ballycast.com, and all previous episodes are available as well. We want you.
Look, Bullwinkle, a message in a bottle.
Fan mail from some flounder?
No, this is what I really call a message.
And now a word about one of our most popular products.
Here's one you'll use. From 1948, the full set of directions for making a blade box. The classic blow-off that earns dollars by the hatful. The blade box lines them up with dollars in their hand and sends them home happy. Why would anybody pay an extra dollar to see a magic trick? It works like this.
Now, Sheila is going to step behind the curtain for a moment and remove her costume. We're not doing this to be lewd or crude. She must remove her clothes to be able to perform this act. Here, honey, just hand out that costume. I'll fold it up nice for you. And now, she will recline in the cabinet, and I'm going to close the lid. Notice that the lid has openings for 13 steel blades. I'm not going to cut this beautiful young lady, because as I insert each blade, she's bending, twisting and contorting her body in and around every one of these blades of steel, just like a snake, just like a rubber band. She can bend and stretch as these blades threaten to sever the most delicate parts of her body. And now, I'm going to give you a chance to come up on stage and see for yourself. Sheila has agreed to expose herself to your gaze, so you can come up here to see how she does it. You're going to see how her amazing body can twist around these razor-sharp blades. You're going to see the glint of the cold steel against the texture of her skin. Sheila feels that exposing her secret and her body this way is worth $1, because she's paid only through your curiosity and your generosity. Just hand your dollar to the man at the foot of the steps and come up and see this beautiful little girl in the state she is in now, unashamed and waiting for you to view her.
Digitized and carefully restored in PDF format for just $4 for a real piece of carnival history or a great working blow-off that still plays today. Use the link on the podcast page.
Next episode, it'll be October, or close to it, so it'll be time to remember the gruesome but popular Theater Grand Guignol, home of stabbings, torture, and acid baths as entertainment. Lots of fun for everybody. Now, before we get to the recipe for carnival food, let's talk about some of the sideshow's strangest attractions. They might be animal or human, and they might be small.
No bigger than a bale of hay. Too small for even a baby to ride. See Tiny Cappy, the tiniest tiny horse in all of this wide world. Don't miss this one. Now's a good time to go. This is where you see Tiny Cappy, the world's smallest horse. He's so tiny, he's so cute, you'd like to pick him up in your arms and take him right on home with you. Don't miss Tiny Cappy, one of the world's smallest horses. That little dwarf horse, no taller than a bale of hay. Now this is not a pony, but a real live dwarf horse. See Tiny Cappy, one of the smallest horses in all of this wide world. Don't miss this one. Now's a good time to go. Come in.
But also they might weigh a hell of a lot. Amid the swamp of popular television these days are shows about incredibly fat people, shows like 1,000-pound Sisters and even 1,000-pound Roomies. Back in 2008, in episode 16, Ballycast interviewed Bruce Snowden, known to the sideshow as Harold Huge.
I'm bedbound at the moment.
What did your act consist of?
Just sitting there, Jackson loses here. He issues somewhat naked blob of fat.
Did you hand out cards?
I used to tell him, here, fuck. Being tied bucks and I'll stand up.
Did they?
No. I just told people, you know, they'd ask me how much I weighed. I'd tell them a slight lie. 712 pounds. And I said, well, I was, you know, on the road, I was stable at 550. Then I became a diabetic, type 2 diabetic. And as soon as I was, my weight was going to drop, you turn diabetic, your weight goes up. And sometimes the monks would say, Mike, can I ask you a question? And I took the answer, give him the stock answer, 712 pounds. And he stared at me wonderingly.
Well, how did you know what I wanted to ask you?
Because 99.9% of people ask me the same question. I got answered three questions.
So nobody ever came in with a few too many beers and asked something just very, very impolite?
Well, that happens occasionally. That stock one was get a gang of teenage boys. And one of them asked me, how big is your cock? And I looked at him wonderingly. Tell me, you normally go around asking strange men how big their penises are. You ever see a teenage boy turn his red as tea and a dead gallop out the door? Try to maintain a proper diet, huh? And there's vegetables and vitamins. All too many get up. They get hooked on that road food. They try to live on corn dogs and what have you. And very, very, the health will start to go after a couple of weeks. You can see, most of my friends are dead. D-E-A-D, dead.
Bruce Snowden died in late 2009 at the age of 63. There were many more.
And now I'm going to bring out the fat lady, Two-Ton Tessie from Texas. My God, is she ever fat. It takes six men to hug her and an 18-wheeler to lug her. Over a quarter ton of beauty on the hoof, 566 pounds and getting bigger by the day. She's going to do a little dance for you, and when she does, you'll feel this whole tent shake like a wrecking ball hit it, and you'll see Tessie shake like a bowl of your grandma's jelly. Where is she? Go in there and drag her out here. Get her away from the food. Folks, I have no idea what makes Tessie so fat. She only eats one meal a day, starts at 9 a.m., and she's still at it right now.
The sideshow attractions are the giants, the midgets, the fat man, the fat lady. These people absolutely fascinate me. You would feel sorry for them, perhaps. They never felt sorry for themselves. You might have considered they were handicapped. I would consider it so. But they overcame those handicaps. They were such a pleasure to be around.
I was being interviewed by Meredith Vieira, and she asked me that question. How do you feel about exploiting these handicapped people? I said, I feel just fine about it. Because first of all, they don't consider themselves handicapped. They consider themselves as having overcome their handicap. And I pay them very well. But let me ask you, how do you feel about exploiting these handicapped people? You aren't going to give them a damn penny, and yet you are going to show them for free to millions of people on your television. And right then the camera went off.
As just one example from the past, Amanda Siebert, known as Jolly Irene. For some reason, fat people were usually all billed as Baby Somebody or Jolly Somebody. Jolly Irene was a very successful sideshow performer. She weighed just 120 pounds until she married and gave birth at age 21, and then she gained weight until she was nearly 700 pounds. Some sources say 826 pounds. Diets didn't help. She didn't think she'd ever marry, and she couldn't get any other job, so she took to the road and found success and money putting herself on display. She worked for Ringling, but she was too big to fit through the door of the passenger car. They suggested that she ride in the baggage car, but she found that insulting and left for the Dreamland Circus sideshow on Coney Island. And there, she married. Off-season, she appeared on the vaudeville stage. She kept working there for 20 years until she became too ill to continue. Nobody knows whether she was really jolly, but she made a good enough show of it and presented herself as sunny and carefree. Every show had at least one fat lady or fat man, along with its giants, midgets, wild men, hinheads, and the like. But for fat women and fat men, the weight always takes a toll, and Jolly Irene died from a heart attack at about age 60. Now, the recipe, and this one won't make you fat.
Don't you love sitting down in a Tex-Mex restaurant and starting the meal with some chips and salsa? You haven't had salsa if all you've tasted is that cooked stuff out of a jar. Many restaurants trick it up with spices and flavorings that just get in the way. Try it this simple way and you'll find it easy to make and easy to sell. One large can, 15 to 28 ounces of stewed tomatoes. 1 to 3 tablespoons of canned jalapeno peppers. 1 pinch of salt. You can make this very quickly with a food processor. Attach the knife blade and put the jalapenos in the processor, reserving the liquid from the can for extra heat at the end. Pulse the peppers just a bit with the regular knife blade until they are very chopped. Then add the can of stewed tomatoes, including its liquid, and a bit of salt. Then process a few seconds until the tomatoes are chopped enough to suit you. Taste and mix in more of the reserved jalapeno liquid if you need your salsa hotter. Done. Serve it with tortilla chips. Tostitos scoops work very well.
You know, every episode webpage has a place to make comments, and I have so enjoyed the many insightful and thoughtful comments from you, the members of the Ballycast audience. I read every one, and I hope you'll continue to express yourself fully and often. Thank you. Oh, and by the way,
if I should stay, of the way, and I will always love you. I will always love you. Bittersweet memories, that's all I am taking with me. Goodbye, please don't cry. We both know that I'm not what you need. And I hope that you have all that you ever dreamed of. And I wish you joy and happiness. But above all of this, I wish you love. And I will
the monthly book in a moment. It's a scary one. Before we get there, let me close with this.
That concludes our sideshow. I think I'd better be trotting off.
Ballycast is produced by Wayne Kaiser for Blue Ridge Entertainment under a Creative Commons 3.0 attribution, non-commercial, no derivatives license. That means you can keep it, copy it, share it with a friend, just tell them where it came from, don't change it, and don't sell it. If you enjoyed it, you can subscribe at ballycast.com. Visit us, link to us, subscribe to the podcast, and most importantly, enjoy.
Thanks for riding. Please exit to your left.
This is A Fall of Moondust by Arthur C. Clarke.
Welcome aboard, sir, madam.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Hope the ship's big enough to take me, Irving. Seems awful small.
Stop worrying, Myra.
I just don't want to get stuck in a seat.
Everywhere we go, you say that. It's not happened yet.
There's always a first time.
Look, we didn't come all the way to the moon for you to get stuck in a seat. Just enjoy the cruise.
How long is the trip expected to last, young lady?
4 hours, madam.
Do we sit anywhere?
Yes, Lini has been designed to give a panoramic view for all its passengers.
Well, I'll stay here at the front, if you don't mind.
I'm sure you'll be very comfortable. Welcome aboard, sir.
Hello.
Hi there. Welcome aboard.
My name is Jayawardhana. Do I sit anywhere?
Just sit anywhere, sir. All seats have a perfect view.
Thank you.
Have you got room for your knees? Are they ship-shaped, sir?
Yes, Captain Harris. Full compliment, as usual.
Good. Catering facilities checked?
Of course.
I'd like the seafood mornay, if that's possible.
I'll see what I can do, Pat.
Good. I'll complete my pre-cruise checks.
Welcome aboard.
I hope I haven't kept you waiting, young lady.
No, sir. You are the last, but not late. You'll find a seat down on the right there.
Thank you. That'll be fine.
Excuse me. The young man in uniform who went through to the front...
Captain Harris has just gone to the bridge.
Are you the only two crew members?
That's right.
Oh, dear.
Don't worry. The Selene's a very simple ship to operate.
Don't think I'm making a fuss, miss, but that door seems a bit flimsy. I mean, compared with an aircraft door back on Earth.
The moon creates her own conditions. Just relax and enjoy the trip. Selene's been through the most rigorous safety checks.
You okay, Myra?
Fine, Irving. These seats are very comfortable.
Yeah, it's a neat little ship.
I think that's one of the things I like best about the moon. Everything is so clean.
We're a long way from 39th.
New York's still home. I hope the apartment's okay.
David will look after everything.
Welcome aboard, Selene. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Sue, and Captain Harris and I are pleased you could join us on the only sightseeing trip across a lunar sea. We shall be away from Port Roris about 4 hours, and our first objective will be Crater Lake, where we will have a breathtaking view of the Mountains of Inaccessibility. To reach our destination, we shall travel across the Sea of Thirst, ironically named because it is formed from the driest dust imaginable. A vacuum-packed souvenir awaits you at Port Roris on our return.
Right.
The surface temperature of the sea at this moment is around 300 below zero.
God. You wanted to get away from the heat, Myra.
We are rather proud of Selene. She's a unique craft even for the 21st century. Compact, extremely simple to operate, and her terminology will be familiar to most of you as it's taken from Earth maritime phraseology. We refer to her fore and aft, port, starboard, bridge, and portholes. She is propelled by electric motors that drive fans below the dust surface. But unlike conventional sea craft, there is no discomfort to be experienced by erratic motion. There are no waves, and seasickness is something we'll never experience. If during the trip you have any questions, please don't hesitate to ask. A three-course meal incorporated in the price of your cruise ticket will be served in about an hour and a half from now. Enjoy your trip, everyone, and I'll now hand you over to Captain Harris.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Captain Pat Harris speaking to you from the bridge. If you would care to swivel your seats to the rear, you will observe the domes of Port Roris dropping swiftly from the skyline.
Isn't that a sight?
You have all, no doubt, observed the stars from the clarity of space and been dazzled by the face of the mother planet, but this is a new experience for you. We are now traveling on neither land nor sea or space, but a little of each. No sea on Earth could ever be as calm as this. We'll stop for a moment and let you experience how still and placid the lunar surface can be.
Isn't it so quiet and peaceful?
Ghostly, still grayness.
This is the real face of the moon. That view hasn't changed for billions of years. It's an enormous thought, isn't it? Just how far do you imagine the horizon is? Believe it or not, only 3 kilometers. It looks a couple of light years away, but if you could walk on this stuff, you'd be there in 20 minutes. We'll move on, and I'll leave Sue to explain how the sea was formed.
Most of the moon is covered by a thin layer of dust, usually no more than a few millimeters in depth. Some of the debris fell from the stars when meteorites rained on the unprotected surface over at least 5 billion years. Some has flaked from lunar rocks as they expanded and contracted in the fierce climatic conditions. It's more liquid than sand or anything similar. It flows quicker than syrup and just slower than water. Over the ages, it has flowed down from the mountains into the lowlands to form pools and lakes. The first explorers expected this, but the Sea of Thirst was a surprise because of its size. And ahead we now see the Mountains of Inaccessibility, so called because they are entirely surrounded by sea.
Have they ever been climbed?
No, they haven't. Aren't they a wonderful sight? I'll go through to the bridge and put the main lights out to give you a better view and leave you to take in the haunting beauty.
Look.
I've never seen anything like this in my entire life.
What are the passengers like?
They seem an ordinary bunch. There's one man I seem to recognize from somewhere, but I can't place him.
I'll point him out when I do my walkabout. Are you busy later? After the trip, I mean.
Well, I said I'd go and see the latest Earth video with a friend. Why do you ask?
I'm thinking of trying the new restaurant that's opened in Clavier City. I thought you might like to join me.
I went 3 or 4 days ago. It's very good.
Some other time then.
That'd be nice. I don't think you'll need to eat out tonight. There's plenty of seafood mornay aboard.
Good.
Oh, there's a Miss Morley sat front port who asked who you were.
Yeah, I think I noticed her. Why do they always look like that?
Now then, Captain, diplomacy and charm. Remember your code of conduct. I'd better get back to them.
Out of this world.
It's strange, isn't it? That man has to travel so far from the fields, lakes, and forests to appreciate the real beauty of his own world.
Are you a poet?
No, ma'am. I just never dreamed it could look so beautiful. Bluey green crescent hanging in space.
Do you think David's looking up at the moon, Irving?
I hope he's looking after the office.
Forget the office. That's what we came here for. Rest, the doctor said.
You tell me. And who's worrying about the apartment?
Not now. I'm looking at a wonderful world.
Yeah. Are you New Yorkers?
How'd you guess?
Oh, I worked in the Bronx for a while.
You're not American.
No. Australian, one of the originals.
Ah.
Long way from the Big Apple.
Nobody calls it that anymore.
We can almost see both our homes from here. I'm Irving Schuster. This is my wife, Myra.
Oh, I'm pleased to meet you. I'm Duncan McKenzie.
It's our first trip to the moon.
Really?
Our first trip anywhere for years. Wow. The doctor, a personal friend, says, Irving, you have a fine son to take care of your business. Take a vacation. Next year, maybe, he says.
So, here we are.
Always next year.
So now it's next year. And you? First trip?
Oh, yeah. I've been promising myself this for a long time.
You're alone? You don't have a wife with you?
Myra. Myra.
Excuse me, sir. Please don't think me impertinent, but have we met before?
Oh, I'm sure I couldn't have forgotten such a charming lady.
Sorry, I rarely forget a face. Occupational hazard. You must remind me of someone else.
I just seem to have that sort of face.
Get the cans from my bag.
Are you sure you shouldn't be at the front, Captain?
We're quite safe on automatic pilot for another 7 minutes, Miss Moy. We're traveling a well-trodden route in a straight line.
But what's that?
Sorry?
Up ahead. Captain, we're heading straight into it.
Irving! Irving, there's a hole in the sea!
It'll be Pat, Myra. We'll be programmed to go around it.
Pat, what is it?
Oh, God, I don't know. I'm going on a bridge.
My God!
Pat, we're sinking. What's happening?
Hang on, Sue. I'm trying to lift her. We're going down!
Look at the portholes. The dust is halfway up the glass!
Chief Engineer Lawrence, Mr. Davis.
Oh, Jim! Good of you to come. Take a seat.
I don't have long. What can I do for you, Rex?
You've time for some tourist office refreshment, I'm sure. Anne, would you please?
Yes.
Are you buttering me up for something, Rex?
Just being courteous to a fellow member of the moon management team.
Always the PR man. Come on, let's have it.
I had a stroll through the park earlier and happened to bump into the chief administrator. He's rather taken with the park, Jim, particularly impressed by the 15-meter sunflowers.
And the back-projected clouds, no doubt. It must be nice to have the time to admire them.
Oh, those clouds are lovely. You should dream a little.
I can look at clouds on Earth and listen to birds.
Well, perhaps you'd like something else. A thunderstorm, maybe?
No, thanks. So what did the chief have to say?
We discussed an idea for tourism.
Oh, you know my views on tourism. Just an additional headache we can live without.
Oh, no, we can't. It's our lifeblood here on the moon, Jim. The only way we can be independent of Earth. This idea would benefit both our departments.
Go on, Rex, I'm listening.
The water skiing champion of Australia has contacted me to ask if anyone has ever skied on the Sea of Thirst.
I thought you wanted me here for something serious.
I am serious. It could be a whole new sport. Is it technically possible? That's all I want to know.
It's probably just a matter of being able to maintain speed and maneuverability. I just don't know. We'd have to do some experiments.
Could Cellini do it?
It's possible. All I can see from my department's point of view is headaches. I'm running on a shoestring as it is.
Exactly, Jim. The tourists bring the money in. Any extra revenue generated by a fresh influx would be used to benefit both our departments.
When I've got time, I'll see what I can do, all right?
That's all I'm asking.
Excuse me, sir. Red priority column 7.
Put it through, Anne. Chief Engineer Lawrence has the same clearance as me.
It's for Chief Engineer Lawrence.
Fine. Put it through, Anne. Call for you on 7, Jim.
Thank you. Lawrence, yes? How long ago? No answer whatsoever. Try the moon crash band, Ed. You did. Right. See you in control in a couple of minutes.
Trouble?
That was Ed, my number one. It's probably a false alarm, but I'd better get down to control. Cellini hasn't made her routine call.
Oh, what do you think could have happened?
I'm going to find out.
I'll come with you.
If anything has happened to her out there, we can only reach her with the dust skis. I've said all along we should have had 2 dust cruisers operational before we started these trips.
I couldn't agree more. That's the sort of equipment we could buy with any additional revenue.
Ed, what's the problem?
The 1900 hour signal came in bang on time. That was here.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing at 2000. That's when they called me. I've had the instrument guys check it out our end, and it's all right. We tried to contact her on her regular frequency and drew a blank.
Mm.
We've scanned the adjoining bands, and again, nothing. That's when I called you.
And nothing on the moon crash band?
Not yet.
If she traveled from the 1900 signal until now, how far away from the last point of contact could she be?
flat out. She'd only have traveled 80 kilometers, but she won't be traveling that fast on a sightseeing trip.
Right, if we draw a circle with her position at 1900 hours as its center and an 80 kilometer radius, she's got to be in there somewhere. Then if we concentrate on this arc in the direction she's traveling, that'll cut down the odds for finding her.
Let's not provoke publicity over this. After all, it's probably just a simple breakdown.
Yes, yes, but we'll dispatch the Duskies anyway. Even if it is a false alarm, it's good training.
How long before we know?
It'll take a while to search several thousand square kilometers at night. Ed, get them started in this area. I'll prepare for us to travel to Port Roris in a suborbital, just in case we're needed.
Okay, Chief.
What could have happened?
I don't know. If it isn't a communications breakdown, there can only be a few possibilities. It was sudden. An explosion, maybe.
I'd better set up a meeting with the legal department. Do you think we should tell the chief administrator?
I'll leave that to you. Maybe he's wandering around your park somewhere.
Thanks, Jim. This won't do the tourist industry any good.
You should be worrying about the tourist that went out on Cellini.
Oh, yes, you're right. I'll contact Port Roris and make sure they all sign their indemnity forms. If it came to the worst, we could be sued for billions.
That isn't what I meant. Let's hope they've just hit something and put their communications out of action.
Excuse me, Chief. I've had an idea.
I'm listening, Ed.
Why don't we try a Lagrange satellite? The astronomers up there might be able to see something.
At night? From 50,000 kilometers?
It's worth a try. Cellini's searchlights could still be burning, and they'd easily spot that on the sea. Contact them, Ed. I'll get our transport arranged to Port Roris.
Dr. Lawson?
Yes, yes, what is it?
I'm very sorry to disturb you, Doctor, but we've received a priority red signal from Lunar Traffic Control, Earthside North.
Traffic Control? I'm an astronomer, not a parking attendant. What do they want?
A dust cruiser, the Cellini, has gone missing on a sightseeing trip across the Sea of Thirst. 22 people on board. Traffic Control thought there may be a chance we'd spot her lights through the telescope.
Oh, I don't know. I'm supposed to be carrying out serious scientific research. Not looking for a busload of lost pleasure seekers.
Yes, Doctor.
100-centimeter telescope. Beautiful instrument. Designed to look at objects billions of times further away from us than the moon. Here we are, like a ping-pong ball. Perpetually balanced between Earth and the moon. Where do you say that thing was supposed to be?
The Sea of Thirst, Doctor. I've brought a map.
Map? Map? Don't need a map. Let's look at that view on the screen. That's the Sea of Rains. Those craters are Archimedes, Plato, Aristolus, and Eudoxus. Marvellous! Even on low power.
Yes. Shouldn't we be scanning the dark section, Dr. Lawson?
Of course we should. That's where we're going. It's a big place, the Sea of Thirst. Do you have any coordinates?
Yes, Doctor.
Well, punch them in. You're expected now to work this thing.
Yes, Doctor. There. It's very dark.
Well, of course it's dark. It's night time. Scan slowly.
What was that?
What? Where?
A bright light. It could have been a searchlight.
Well, trace it back. Very slowly.
There.
Much too bright. Those are the lights of Port Roris. Now, if she's on the Sea of Thirst, we should locate her with a light amplifier or a radiation detector.
It's so dark I can't see quiet
everyone please. I think we've stopped moving now. Is anyone injured?
No.
But just make sure that everyone within touching distance of you is conscious. I'm going to reset the main lights and the purification system.
Irving, you all right?
I'm okay. Are you?
Yeah. Mr. McKenzie?
Oh, fine. Look at the portholes.
Oh, we're buried. Oh, God, we're buried.
And Miss Morley, are you all right?
We are buried, aren't we?
Oh.
Yes, we are under the surface, but we can't be very deep.
At least we now have light. How is everybody, Sue?
At the worst shaken, I think.
Well, if the food's still servable, this might not be a bad time to serve it.
I'll see what I can do.
Good. Could I have your attention, please?
Sure.
We are still in one piece, and no one is worse than a little shocked, as far as I can see.
Right.
If anyone does need first aid, Sue is a trained nurse, so speak up.
Right.
I think we've been unfortunate to have been caught in some sort of landslip or moonquake. There's no need to be alarmed. Even if we can't get out under our own power, Port Roris will soon have someone here. Meanwhile, Sue is about to serve refreshments, so I suggest you all relax, and I'll contact base. Selene to Port Roris. Selene to Port Roris. Come in, please.
Food's underway. Are you through?
Not yet.
What's happened? Any ideas?
I'm not sure. Some sort of landslip. Selene to Port Roris. Come in, please.
Perhaps the radio's damaged.
Possibly. I'm getting an outside pressure reading, which indicates we're deeper than I first thought.
Well, how deep?
About a rough estimate, I'd say about 10 meters.
As much as that? Is everything else all right?
All equipment appears to be functional.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir. No passengers allowed in here.
No, that's all right, Sue.
I don't want to intrude. Captain, Selene is your ship. I thought I'd introduce myself in case I can be of some assistance.
Glad to have you aboard, Commodore.
Commodore?
Commodore Hanstein.
The man who led the first expedition to Pluto.
I thought I recognized you, but your name didn't ring a bell from the passenger list.
I've shaved off my beard, and my alias is Hanson. Since my retirement, I've tried to do some quiet sightseeing.
Sorry about this, Commodore.
No, it's not your fault. How desperate is the situation?
I'll carry on with the meeting.
Yeah, fine, Sue. We're deeper than I first thought. My guess is about 10 meters.
Doesn't sound too good.
We aren't too far from Port Roris. They should find us fairly quickly.
My experience tells me to look on the black side. How long could we last if we had to?
Well, oxygen would be the limiting factor. We've enough for about 7 days, Earth days, that. Provided there are no leaks, and she seems sound enough.
What about food, water, and power?
No problem. We carry the compulsory emergency supply rations. We can purify all the water we need, and there's ample power now that the main motors are shut down.
Any luck with the radio?
I think the dust's blanketed everything out. I've left the beacon on Moon Crash. If anything can get through, it'll be that.
If they had to find us any other way, any estimate how long it would take?
Well, the search would have begun as soon as our 2000 signal was missed. They'll know our general area, but we'll have sunk without trace.
In the meantime, you've got to keep the customers happy. Why not give them a pep talk about the search procedure?
Yeah, I'll do that, Commodore. Thank you.
Best not to give the impression somebody will be knocking on the door in half an hour, though. It would make it difficult if we had to wait a day or two.
Can't see a thing. Can you?
I felt sure we'd find something after the photographs had gone through computer enhancement, but it's just as if the sea hasn't been touched for hundreds of years.
Billions of years. In the Earthlight, it'll be possible to see her shadow clearly. If not, then we can assume she came to grief in this area. Put these through the enhancer, Ingrid.
Right. Crater Lake? In the middle of the mountains?
It's far more logical to assume she'd have an accident where always boulders are strewn about the place than in the open sea where she'd be unobstructed.
It's still very black, Doctor.
No light at all. Scores of isolated crags and boulders. You see, all this area is blocked from us by the mountains. The only chance there is to investigate at ground level. Inform Earthside Control and give them our interim report.
Are we giving up, Dr. Lawson?
Good Lord, no. Just getting interesting.
Commissioner Davis.
Yes, Anne?
The copy of the report from the LaGrange satellite's through on Telfax.
Any news?
No, they haven't seen anything at all.
This has happened at a very bad time. Is that the passenger list?
Yes, sir. There's an appendix.
Hell, that's all I need. Commodore Hanstein's on board, travelling under an assumed name.
The Commodore Hanstein?
Imagine what that's going to do to our public image. Lawrence should have arrived at Port Roris by now. Make sure he's got all this information.
Yes, sir.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the position. We're only about 60 kilometers from base, 3 from the mountains of inaccessibility, and we are in no immediate danger.
But how long, Captain?
As I said earlier, I've no reason to believe we won't be located quite soon.
Shouldn't someone be on the bridge by the radio?
Now, I've boosted reception. We'll hear any incoming signal throughout the ship, and they can hear us from in here.
What do we do in the meantime?
Well, we are very fortunate to have Commodore Hanstein aboard. As you probably know, he's the most traveled Earthman in history.
And I don't intend staying still for long here.
Perhaps, Commodore, you can suggest ways we can pass the time.
All right, Captain. Do we have any books on board?
Do we?
There's one. Would you mind passing it up, please? And another. Oh, fine. We seem to have an overkill of the official tourist handler. Now, what's this one about?
Oh, I'm afraid it's only a little jaunt through history.
The orange and the apple.
It's absolute rubbish.
We're not looking for heavy literature. The orange and the apple. The truth of the romance between Nell Gwynne and Sir Isaac Newton. It sounds juicy.
It was written by a promiscuous schoolgirl on Mars.
Thank you, Miss Morley. I know this one. Shane, good old-fashioned Western. Well, that's a start. Later on, we could have some volunteer readers, Captain.
Good idea. Well, that's our entertainment taken care of. Are there any more questions?
I noticed there was a spacesuit in the airlock. Well, couldn't someone swim up to the surface? Then the search party would know where we were immediately.
Sorry, Miss Morley, but it would be like swimming in sand. You'd be absolutely blind. How would the person know which was up or down? How could he close the outer door after him? The dust would just flood in.
If there are no more questions, why don't we all introduce ourselves? I'll go around the ship, and perhaps you'll give your name, occupation, and hometown. You have a remarkable collection of talent on board, if I may say so, Captain. Any sign of our rescuers?
No, Commodore, not as yet.
Do you mind if I have a word, Captain?
No, Mr.
Mackenzie.
Yes, our Australian physicist, correct?
Correct, Commodore. I'm a little worried.
Go ahead.
What's it all about?
If my reasoning is correct, a 7 days limitation on our oxygen supply won't be our greatest danger.
Then what is?
Heat. We are blanketed by dust. It's about the best insulator there is. The heat from our bodies and the machinery can't escape. That means it'll get hotter and hotter until we cook.
I never gave that a thought. How long do you think it'll take?
Well, not much more than a day. It'll take me about half an hour to come up with a more accurate estimate. The cabin temperature readout will give us a fair indication.
Yeah, he's right. It's gone up 2 degrees already.
Yeah, a degree an hour. I was afraid it might be as bad as that.
We'll have to increase the cooling part.
Won't that make matters worse?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. All our refrigeration system does is pump heat out of the cabin. Now there isn't anywhere for it to go.
Well, check your figures, Mackenzie, and let us know how long we've got as soon as possible.
Right.
And we'd better keep this between the three of us for the time being.
Hello, Chief. Hi, Ed. Welcome to Port Roris.
Anything new on Cellini, George?
Oh, nothing good, Chief. We have a report from Lagrange Satellite and another from Plato Observatory, and get this, Commodore Hanstein's on board.
Mm. Aboard Cellini?
Yep.
Does Tourist Commissioner Davis know?
Oh, he's taking it very personally, Chief.
I'll bet. Anything from the Duskies?
Afraid not. I'll have to pull them in soon to change crews.
Okay, but make it snappy. What does Lagrange say?
Even with computer enhancement, they can't see anything out there. I suppose all her lights could be out.
No lights, no radio. That would mean a breakdown of at least 10 circuits. What does Plato Observatory have to say?
Oh, it gets worse, Chief. At 1936 hours, they recorded a massive land slippage in the area of the Mountains of Inaccessibility. A violent moonquake.
Hell. So that's what's happened. A lot of activity?
Like nothing they ever recorded before.
Are there likely to be further tremors?
Well, they say very unlikely. Once the stress has been relieved, it isn't likely to happen again for a couple of thousand years.
The time's about right for Cellini to have been slap bang in the middle of it.
If they are buried under those rocks, they'll have had it by now. Selina's hull would have cracked like an eggshell. Okay. Get the Duskies back, George. I'm calling off the search in the Sea of Thirst. Get them fixed up with metal detectors and gas sniffers and head for the mountains when they've changed crews. It's time to pick up the pieces.
Right, Chief.
Ed, inform Dr. Lawson on Lagrange of the news. Thank him for his help and all that.
Yeah, I will do.
That's it, then. I'd better speak to the administrator. And to Rex Davis, I suppose.
Doctor, there's a message from Chief Engineer Lawrence, thanking you for your efforts and saying the search has been called off. There's been a report of a moonquake causing an avalanche on the mountains of inaccessibility, and it seems that Cellini is crushed under the rocks.
Blast! I was almost ready.
What's that, Doctor?
It's an old-fashioned infrared scanner, linked up to the telescope. Quite enjoyed the challenge. All a waste of time, now. Those poor people.
Isn't it still worth a try, Doctor? She might have survived the avalanche. Would it work in the mountainous area?
No, of course not. There's been an avalanche and landslides. All the temperatures would be uneven. Complete waste of time.
Sorry, sir. I don't know anything about them.
Come here. Very basic. Though Cellini left no visible trace across the sea, she will definitely have left an infrared one. You understand?
Not really.
Oh, she'd have stirred up relatively warm dust from a few feet down and scattered it across a far colder surface. An eye that could detect heat could pick up her track for hours after she passed. It would have just been time for us to make a survey before the sun rose and obliterated all trace of the heat trail.
Couldn't we still try it?
No reason to, now.
I'm still not sure how it works.
Good gracious, Ingrid. Look, it's fundamental. Now, all you have to do...
Captain, Commodore, can I have a word with you?
Uh-huh. Yeah, of course, Mac. How bad is it?
It's bad. If conditions remain the same, we could have our first death from a heat stroke within 20 hours.
As soon as that.
Doesn't give much time to find us and get us out, does it?
No.
If we slipped, that would lower the body temperatures.
It'd help. It would make sense to sleep now before conditions become unbearable.
And we could turn the main lights off.
Right. We must give ourselves every possible chance. May I speak with them? With your permission, Pat.
Yes, sure, Commodore.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
We've all had a busy day, and I think most of us would be glad to get some sleep.
In these conditions?
I agree, Mrs. Schuster. You've probably all noticed that it's becoming a little warm in here, and my advice is to remove all unnecessary clothing.
What do you mean by that?
Now, comfort is much more important than modesty. We'll turn the main lights off and leave the emergency ones on. Somebody will remain awake all the time in the bridge, waiting for our rescuers.
If anyone would like a drink or anything else, please don't hesitate to ask.
Come on, Myra, take off your dress. Be comfortable. Nobody's looking. Everybody's concerned with themselves.
That stewardess, Sue. If God had given me a figure like hers, I would undress. Myra Schuster stays covered up.
Okay, Myra.
I'd like to take the first watch, Captain. I can do some more calculations.
Yeah, I'll be over there if you need me, though I doubt if I'll sleep.
How did the meeting go, Chief?
They're preparing a press release and messages to the next of kin. The administrator's going to come in for a lot of flack.
And Tourist Commissioner Davies?
Smooth as ever. He's writing the press release. Wouldn't surprise me if he didn't try to make out it was a mass suicide to save his precious tourist industry. Oh, what's the situation with the dust skis, Ed?
Oh, they've left for the mountains with the detection gear. And we're set up for a quick turnaround of crews.
Fine. Well, let's hope we can give them a decent burial. I'm going for a drink.
Pat, I'm sorry to wake you, but I can hear something.
No, I wasn't asleep. What is it?
Look, just put your ear to the hull. Can you hear it?
It's the dust moving.
Thank God. They must have found
us. No, I'm not sure. How's the temperature?
It isn't going up as fast as I predicted.
Because the lights are sleeping?
It shouldn't have made that much difference. I don't understand.
The noise. I think I do.
Should we wake the others?
No. This dust is so fine it'll flow like water in the right conditions. I think the heat is slowly dissipating into it and causing a convection current.
I thought they'd found us.
It's a bit of good news anyway if Cellini isn't heating up as quickly as we thought. The dust skis will be out searching. They could even be near us right now.
Drowning your sorrows, Chief.
Oh, on this stuff? You know, we've beaten most of the killer diseases, and we can still lose 22 people out on a joyride.
I know how you feel, Chief. The first ski is back. They're turning it round at the moment.
Fine, Ed.
Oh, and Dr. Lawson from LaGrange Satellite wants to speak to you.
Didn't you tell him about the mountains?
Yeah, I told him earlier, but the message is he wants to speak to you.
Oh, well, I better call him. Ed, use the extension.
Yeah, right.
Hello? Hello?
Dr. Lawson?
Speaking.
Hello, Doctor. Chief Engineer Lawrence.
Good. Cellini, dear fellow, the missing tourist bus. Mm. I believe I know where she is.
Yeah, in the mountains.
No, she never got that far. Anyway, it won't work there. The temperature's too uneven. No, it was while I was explaining the infrared technique to Ingrid. It's very simple, but she wanted a practical demonstration. And that's when we spotted the trail.
Doctor, where have you found Cellini?
Ingrid has just sent the photographs over Telfax to you.
I'll go and get them.
Look, could you start at the beginning, please?
Certainly. You see, after I was unable to locate any sign of your missing craft by conventional use of the telescope, I rigged up an infrared scanning device. Then the word came from you that you were calling off the search because Cellini was probably buried under the mountains. I was a little annoyed about that. But as I was explaining the method of heat detection to my assistant Ingrid, we picked up Cellini's trail. It's quite elementary.
Here you are, Chief.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I have the photographs in front of me now. Yes. I see what you mean. Yes, I can see the trail, but I can't see the cruiser.
That's a puzzle, isn't it? It seems as if she's just flown away.
Doctor, she can't fly.
I know that, of course. So if she can't go up, she must have gone down.
Hey, could be right, Chief.
Hmm. What are you saying, Doctor?
Well, it's obvious to me she can't fly. There's no trace of her leaving that spot. So she must be under it.
What about an explosion? She could have just disintegrated.
Well, there'd be hot fragments all over the place. My infrared scanner would be going wild.
Hell, Doctor, I hope you're right. Excuse me, one moment. Ed, contact Davis and tell him to hold any press releases. Tell him there's a slight chance she's under the sea. I want both dust skis holding here at base. Then, contact Plato Observatory and see if there could be a connection between the landslide in the mountains and that point on the Sea of Thirst.
Sure, Chief.
Dr. Lawson, how accurate is your infrared scanner?
Totally. Depending on the range, of course.
Mm. To what accuracy could you pinpoint the last location of Cellini?
Well, not very well on this floating ping-pong ball. Say to roughly within half a kilometre.
I see. That's still a wide area for such a small craft, but it's a very good start. I'll get the search party back out there straight away.
There is another way.
I'm listening, Doctor.
You could do an infrared scan on the surface of the sea with a great deal of accuracy, but provided we did it before the next sunrise and the heat of the sun's rays obliterated all signs.
Doctor, that's it. Brilliant.
Quite. I could be ready to leave in, 7 minutes, if you'd like me to come down. Feel like stretching my legs.
I'll see what traffic's like in your area and have you picked up. See you soon.
Goodbye.
I've got both dust skis back here waiting, Chief. What's going on?
There may still be a chance. Cellini could be buried somewhere here, under the Sea of Thirst.
Whew. Well, if her systems are still functional, they could still be alive.
That's right. Ed, find a suitable craft in the region of LaGrange to bring Doc Lawson and his machine down.
Right, Chief.
Shall I get the skis to this location?
Send one out with a surveyor's rod. There's no harm in trying. Tell them that I'm coming out myself as soon as Dr. Lawson arrives.
I'd like to drive, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. Pat and Sue are friends of mine.
Oh, sure, George. Contact Farside and ask for a loan of one of their skis. Have another crew wait for it here at a moment's standby.
Right. Chief, there's a ship, the Auriga, 10 hours out from Earth, bound for Clavius City. There's time to divert it to LaGrange.
That's fine, Ed. I'll do it. I have a feeling there'll have to be a few strings pulled. Keep Davis in touch with what's happening, but keep it low-key. We've an awful long way to go yet.
Quieten that bluegrass down, Lester. I have a job to hear if there are any more messages.
Just keeping my roots, man. Where is it we're going to?
LaGrange Satellite, then diverting to Port Royce.
Oh, Skipper, I had a little lady lined up in Clavius City.
I had to cancel my own arrangements, too, Lester. This diversion has come from the owners via the government.
That important? Why are we going to LaGrange?
Picking a guy up. He's got to be at Port Roar as soon as possible. Better tell the passengers.
Bet it's something to do with that tourist bus gone missing.
We aren't supposed to listen to that security band.
It'll be a boring trip without it. That and my banjo.
Go tell the passengers.
Okay.
Auriga to LaGrange, ETA 5 minutes.
What's it all about then, Lester?
Mr. Spencer, all I know is diversion to LaGrange observation satellite, then on to Port Roris, a one-horse town. Don't know how long we'll be there. Had a hot one lined up in Clavia City, even booked a restaurant.
Oh, you must have some idea. You can tell me, Lester.
Couldn't tell you, Mr. Spencer. I know you're a newsman. Even if I did know something, Skip would go mad.
I have a 12-month contract on the moon. I'll be making lots of important contacts. Anybody who does me a favor could be helping themselves for the future.
Well, don't tell anybody I say it.
I never reveal my sources.
I reckon it's something to do with the missing dust cruiser.
What missing dust cruiser?
Skipper and me were listening to a security band. Shouldn't have been, though. Tourist cruiser Selene's missing. 22 on board. Messed up my stay in port.
Lester, will you get on back here? We're about to dock.
Now, don't say I say it. We're picking a scientist up.
Hey, Lester, you make sure he takes this vacant seat, huh?
See what I can do, Mrs. Spencer.
That seat okay for you, Dr. Lawson?
Yes, thank you. Very comfortable. Are you sure my luggage is safe?
Oh, it'll be quite all right. But what the hell is it anyway?
Scientific equipment. Very sensitive. Be careful.
Sure will.
Bit of a late change of plan, Mr.
Lawson. Dr. Lawson.
My name's Spencer. Are you visiting Port Roris or a patient?
No, I'm not a medical man. Astronomer, actually. Spot of bother in the Sea of Thirst. Fascinating.
Oh, I don't know that area too well.
Oh, I have some photographs. Now, see that line?
Yes.
Ah, you're a newsman.
Does it show that much?
Badge protruding from inside pocket. I'm a trained observer, you see. Excuse me. Oh, just catch a few minutes' sleep. Knew it was going to be a busy day.
I refuse to listen to any more of the orange and the apple. It's nothing less than pornography. With most people down to their underwear.
She's right, Myra. Most people are. It's roasting in here. You're gonna have to take your dress off. This is no time for modesty. It's time for goddamn comfort.
Irving.
Look, I'm sorry, Myra, but be sensible. Miss Morley, I can understand. You, I can't.
All right. Maybe we've had a little bit too much reading. But we can't sleep all the time. Does anybody have any ideas for recreation?
Let us have an examination of the motives of people for traveling to the moon.
That's a good idea, Professor...
Jayawardena.
I came here because somebody told me I'd only weigh 20 kilos up here. That's why I came.
Oh, do you feel comfortable in a spacesuit, Doctor?
Never worn one in my life.
As long as you don't suffer from claustrophobia.
If you could see the size of my laboratory aboard LaGrange, you wouldn't ask that question. Well, it's nice to be somewhere with a bit of gravity. This oxygen flask looks a bit small.
Oh, that's just your emergency supply. The main supply is on the dust ski. Now, let's get our helmets on.
Right, Chief.
How's that?
Seems fine.
Now, the only control you need worry about is the intercom. That's the panel on your right. It's switched on now, so we can talk quite freely. Any questions?
What's this red button for?
Emergencies. You won't need it, I hope. It sets off a homing radio beacon if you get lost. Don't touch anything you aren't certain of, Doctor.
Don't worry, I won't.
Okay, George. Ready to roll.
Right, Chief. All my life I've studied other worlds from afar. It's my first taste at first hand, so to speak. How long will it take us to get to the spot?
How long, George? Provided the quake hasn't caused any leaks or systems damage, they're okay for about 6 days.
How far down do they likely to be?
Anybody's guess. Sea's never been plumbed out here, but the deepest dust bowl we've found so far was 41 meters. Does the depth matter to the scanner?
Mm-hmm. But now I'm down here, there should be enough heat to give a reading. Not like being stuck up in the Grange. Once you've been located, just how do you intend getting them out?
Good question, Doctor.
How do you manage to get the only genuine bottle of hooch in Port Roris, Mr. Spencer?
The power of the press, Skipper. I had a bigger job getting these lunar survey maps.
All right. That's the Sea of Thirst, and that there'll be the Mountains of Inaccessibility where Selene's lost.
Where she may be lost.
Huh?
Just between you and me, I believe the old man we picked up from the Grange satellite has evidence that she's down in that sea. I stuck close to Lawson. I know he was whizzed through customs and immigration, but the man who met him was Chief Engineer Lawrence, the man in charge of the rescue. He was overheard saying there was a dust ski ready to take them out to the spot.
Sure don't take you long to find your way around, huh?
I'm a pro. I believe that spot there is where Selene is buried. If there are people still alive down there, there's going to be one hell of a salvage operation not too far from here. Port Roris will be the biggest news center in the solar system.
Oh, where do I come in?
Right there, Captain.
Huh?
I want to charter your ship to land me and my video equipment on that promontory, on the western wall of the Mountains of Inaccessibility.
You realize how much that would cost?
My station will pay. I've spoken to them. And about a bonus for you and Lester. This could be one of the biggest news stories of the century. What do you say? Can it be done?
Well, that's one good thing. There's enough food here for 6 days if we start rationing.
Rationing? It seems a long time since you asked me to go to that new restaurant.
Your friend must have been disappointed.
You never asked me who it was, did you?
I thought if you didn't want to eat with me, that's your business.
You shouldn't accept things at face value.
Do you mean if I'd asked about the friend you were seeing the video with, there might not have been one?
Possibly. I might not have wanted you to think it was so easy.
I've always thought you attractive, Sue. I mean...
I know. But let's wait until we're out of here, okay?
Everything all right, Doctor?
No. It doesn't look too good, I'm afraid. Could we stop a moment?
Sure. George?
I heard you.
What's the problem, Doctor? I see. Why was it uniform on the photographs?
I'm just confused at the moment. Selene shed a fan blade around here a week ago. It isn't very deep in parts. Of course, I should have thought of that. When we reach the depth deep enough to swallow Selene, the temperature will be more uniform.
Good. Let's get a move on.
It's going to be a matter of minutes now, Chief.
Right. Doctor, I just don't know.
This could be it. Stop. Okay. Just look at the screen.
I'll get the other dust ski over here. Let's get the probes rigged, George, and start praying.
Now let's all settle down.
They're doing their best.
Settle down. The heat is getting to us. We've got to be patient.
What's the trouble, Commodore?
There's a feeling we're not doing all we can to get out. I've explained that we've no alternative but to wait for rescue.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're at least 10 meters down. Even if we could get the airlock open, no one could overcome the dust's resistance and get to the surface.
But what about the main motors, Captain? We could try them.
I doubt us moving a centimeter, and we go forward, not up.
Well, we could all stand at the back.
That would probably just damage the hull. Yes.
But if there's one chance that it might work, isn't it worth the risk?
Yeah. We're boiling down here.
All right, that's enough from everybody.
The danger in trying to escape unaided is too great. We're safe here for at least 6 more days.
6 days?
Might not be too comfortable. In fact, it'll get hotter. But we've got to stay calm and cooperative.
Calm and cooperative. Listen to that. Shut up! Shut up, everybody!
Myra!
Be quiet! Listen! Listen!
Hey!
They found us! Herbers, they found us! Myra!
I'll look back.
I'll go and try the radio.
I've hit something, but I can't tell what it is.
It's Selene, all right. Just look at the trace on the screen. She's giving off an awful lot of heat. The surface of the dust is moving.
Let's all just stand still.
I don't think there's any cause for alarm. I think it's probably just a convection current.
Okay, George. Follow the image of the scanner with Dr. Lawson and stake her out.
Okay.
Must be her. I've hit her again. She's deep, about 15 meters.
Maybe the old-fashioned echo sounder couldn't be used.
Yes, you may have something there, Doctor. Well, the next time I hit her, I'll leave the probe in. If it is Selene, she's blanketed by dust. That's why the radio didn't work. Yeah, I've hit again. I'll try the moon crash band. Yeah, it doesn't mean they're alive, though, George. That signal's on automatic. Probably lasts about 3 weeks. I'll try our own frequency. Loud and clear. This is Chief Engineer Lawrence, right above you. What condition are you in? It was through heat detection we found you, Pat. And we should be making you a bit more comfortable before very long. We'll have you out as quickly as possible. I'll report back to base with the good news. I'll contact you soon and keep you all in touch with progress. Out.
That's the word, Chief. Out.
Lawrence to Port Roris Control. Come in, please.
Hello, Chief. It's Ed.
Good news, Ed. We've found them. Radio contact established and everyone's okay but suffering from the heat. They have enough oxygen and supplies for 6 days. The problem is going to be getting to them through the dust. She's about 15 meters deep and 3 kilometers from the nearest solid land, and we don't know how deep the dust is below her. I'm going to leave George here, and the doctor and I will come back to base to organize rescue equipment. We can only use the skis out here. Now, how much equipment can any one ski carry?
In total, about 5 tons. But because of balance, the largest single item they can carry is about 2 tons.
So, we can't use any really heavy gear.
Right.
Okay. I'll do some thinking on the way back. Have that ski from Farside standing by.
Will do, Chief. Good work.
Yeah, up to now it's been easy. But let's not kid ourselves. The hard part has just begun.
Are we down, Skipper?
Yes, sirree. We've landed.
That was a bit hairy, I must admit.
Yeah, nothing in the master's handbook about a spaceship traveling 100 kilometers. Even the computer wouldn't be bothered with an efficient trajectory readout. I just let her rip upwards for 1,000 kilometers and brought her down on a normal vertical approach with final auto guidance. Kind of neat, eh, Mr. Spencer?
I didn't much care for free falling between the retros firing. I kept wondering what would have happened if they hadn't fired again.
Right into the moon.
Mighty cheerful, Lester. Here we are then, Mr. Spencer. Hope you're satisfied with the view. It's costing you enough. Oh, I hope you realize that the 1,000-kilometer jaunt just qualified us for deep space rates.
Have you no soul? There are 22 people buried out there.
Flying this rig is our living, amigo. I know how it is. All sweet talk and promises at the moment to get your story. Then when it's all old news and the accountants get involved in the cold light of day, that's another story.
Yeah, point taken. Like a scene from a dream, isn't it?
the sea stretching out into space. I can see what must be a dust ski, and even the pole joining Selene to the rest of humanity.
Where's that?
Here, you'll need the binoculars. I'll get the camera set up. This is fantastic. By the time anybody else gets anywhere near here, we'll have all the Earth networks tied up. What a picture. The plane, the probe stuck up into the freezing stillness. The loneliness of man, personified in this huge and hostile universe he has set out to conquer.
Fancy some chow, Skipper.
Smart idea, Lester. We could be here for some time.
Listen. Hello, Selene. Rex Dave is here. I just thought I'd leave you a moment with the sounds of Clavier City Park that await your return. Oh. On behalf of the Chief Administrator, I want to assure you that all the resources available on the moon are being mobilized for your aid. Engineering and technical staff are working round the clock to help you. Chief Engineer Lawrence tells me the provisional plan is to sink pipes down to you to ensure a limitless oxygen supply. Sorry for the inconvenience and strain you've had to undergo. That's all over now. Just relax. Sit and wait, and we'll have you out in no time. Good luck. Best wishes, and we'll be in touch again soon.
Lovely.
I wish the Commissioner wouldn't be quite so optimistic, Commodore.
I'm sure he was just thinking about her morale.
It's been fine since the link was established.
I'll be glad to get out of this. I'm getting too old for these sort of adventures.
You've coped admirably, Commodore. I'm glad you're with us.
Nice of you to say so, Captain. It's good to feel useful in retirement. I'm sorry to be so miserable just when everything has taken a turn for the better. Rather a bad headache, that's all.
Yeah, I have a muzzy feeling myself. Must be to do with being cooped up for so long.
What about these drums, Ed? Will they do?
Tests show they'll support 2 tons before sinking.
Fine. Get at least twice as many as we'll need. Now, an important point, everybody. We must have all tools and spares tied down. All tools to be attached to your belts. That's an order. Can't be wandering back to the stores once we're out at sea.
We have problems with breaking through the roof, Chief.
What's the trouble?
Well, we've tried using a bar on the mock-up, but the roof's too springy and it bounces back every time it's hit.
Ah, but will it happen when we're using a 15-meter pipe with dust packed around it? Do a test, see if it absorbs the recoil.
Yeah, there's another problem. Most of the control circuitry is in the roof, and it's too tough to put a clean hole through it. If it splinters, it could put one of her main systems out.
Well, we'll have to bore. Use a detachable bit. How's the rest of the plumbing coming along?
Oh, it should be ready in 2 or 3 hours, Chief.
Good. I'll be back in 2. Oh, blast. Lawrence.
Hi, Mr. Lawrence. It's Dr. Lawson here.
Oh, hello, Doctor. Did you sleep well?
To my shame, yes, in a very long time.
Oh, you had quite a day. Is there anything you need?
No, thank you. I've been looked after extraordinarily well. I'd just like some advice from you.
Certainly. Anything at all.
I appear during my hours of slumber to have become something of a celebrity in my own way, and I'm being inundated with questions from the media. What shall I do?
Just tell them everything that happened. Enjoy yourself, Doctor.
Well, it does seem rather decadent here in this luxurious hotel room. Tourist Commissioner Davis said I could have anything I fancied. Rather a rash statement, I thought, when I like unlimited use of all the Grange's facilities to study the planet Gregorian One.
I'll consider it a personal favor if you keep the newsboys off my back.
If you put it like that, I shall do my best.
I'm sure you will, Doctor. See you later.
I'm sorry to make a fuss, Sue, but if you got something for my headache...
Excuse me, I am also suffering.
We do have some mild painkillers. I'll get them.
Mr. McKenzie. Could you come through to the bridge? The captain would like to see us.
Yes, of course.
Oh, if they're for a headache, I'd like some too.
Mac, I'm afraid we've got another serious problem on our hands.
Another one?
I'm afraid so. It appears we're experiencing a buildup of carbon dioxide.
But I thought you were safe for another few days.
Yeah, under normal circumstances, but unfortunately I think the heat's affected the CO2 conversion system.
How long do you think we got?
Impossible to say accurately, but I'd say a matter of hours.
That doesn't give Lawrence time to get here with his team.
It could be a bit of panic.
Oh, I'm not too delighted myself.
Any ideas?
Oh, there's always the sleep treatment.
It would have the respiration rate.
Well, that's all we can do then.
I'll have a word with him while you radio through, Pat.
Right. I'll come with you.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm afraid I have some grave news. You may have noticed some difficulty in breathing.
How we have.
And several people have complained of headaches. I'm afraid it's the air. We still have plenty of oxygen, but the carbon dioxide we breathe out isn't escaping. The chemical conversion unit has been affected by the heat. As we see it, there's just one chance. We must render ourselves unconscious.
How can we do that?
Asleep, our respiration rate is halved, and the air will last twice as long.
How do you propose we do that, Commodore?
Sue, I take it the first aid kit is the standard issue.
Yes, Commodore.
Could you pass it, please? Now, here. This, for those of you who might not know, is a standard sleep tube. Now, each tube is sufficient to render an adult instantaneously asleep and keep them asleep for approximately 10 hours.
I'm having none of it.
Now, please, let me finish. We don't have any other choice. Two people will remain awake. One will be the captain.
And I suppose the other one will be you.
No. I'm taking the easy way out. Just to show you how harmless it is, I'll go first. Now, you just unscrew the top and put this end against your forearm. And press here. I'll see you all in 10 hours.
Sleep well, Commodore.
There's no need to worry about that. This stuff.
The rescue base know our position. All that remains is to take a sleep tube. Ah, I see the Commodore has set us a good example.
I'm a paying passenger and I have my rights. I have no intention of taking one of those.
Miss Morley, I am not arguing with you. I am in total charge of this vessel and its occupants. I am tired, I am hot, and my head is banging. I'd much rather sleep, but it's my duty to stay awake.
Morley, we must help the captain. He must preserve the good air. Please pass me one, miss.
Thank you, Professor. Let's not waste any more time. These are microjet hypodermics. You won't feel a thing.
Here you are. Please,
thank you.
Pass them around. Please, this way.
Thank you.
I refuse to do it.
What really worries the lady, Captain, is she thinks you'll take advantage of her while she's asleep.
How dare you! I've never been so insulted.
Neither have I.
Oh, give me the damsey. Don't come any closer.
Sleep tight, Miss Morley.
Everything will be all right. I know it will. Are you comfortable, Mr. Schuster?
Oh, yes, thank you, Sue. Look, Mara's already asleep. See you later. Cellini to Chief Engineer Lawrence, Port Roris Control. Come in, please.
Hello, Pat. Lawrence here. How did it go?
More or less as planned. Myself and Duncan McKenzie are the only two left awake.
I'll give it to you straight, Pat. Even if we don't hit any snags, we can't reach you in under 5 hours. Can you hang on?
We'll have to. Max getting the oxygen supply from the spacesuit. It's the passengers I'm worried about.
All you can do is check their breathing and give them a blast of oxygen when it's necessary. We'll do our best. You can rely on that. Any more you want to say?
No, I'll call you every quarter of an hour. Cellini out.
Got the oxygen.
You go first.
All right.
We'll take it in turns to keep a check on the passengers.
Oh, I never thought breathing could be so enjoyable. Here you are, Pat. How long will this last?
About 12 hours between us. Don't know how much the others will need.
What have you found to smile at?
Sorry, I was just thinking I wouldn't have much chance if you decided to keep the bottle for yourself.
I thought all you moon-born men were sensitive about that.
Oh, no, it's never bothered me. Couldn't help being born in a gravity 1/6 of yours. How could you tell?
Oh, your build, mainly. You all have the same tall, slender physique. And your skin. The lamps never seem to give the same tan as natural sunlight on Earth.
I've never been to Earth, never will. Couldn't take the gravity. Looked to Australia plenty of times through my telescope. Yeah. I have a sentiment for it.
My parents took off from Woomera.
Oh, Woomera's an Aboriginal word meaning a booster stage for spears.
Wow. Well, live and learn.
I better go check the others.
You might not get your story after all, Mr. Spencer. That oxygen cylinder runs out.
You sound a heartless man, Skipper.
Just one of life's realists. That right, Lester? I hope they get the poor devils out. Feel like a goddamn vulture sitting up here on a mountain shelf.
Well, I hope it's going to be a rescue, not an exhumation.
Have to be quick. Captain Harris didn't sound too perky last time he reported in.
Cellini calling Lawrence. Come in, please.
Pat, we aren't far away. I can see the probe. It won't be long now.
At last. It's the heat as well as the carbon dioxide.
I know. Don't talk unless it's absolutely necessary. I'll leave this waveband open, and I'll do the talking. I'll let you know everything that's going on, okay, Pat?
All right.
My God, this is better than I could have hoped for. We'll go on air as soon as you can take me. I'll do the intro, and then you can pick up Lawrence on the security radio wavelength and let him do all the work, huh? My cue out will be, the next voice you hear will be that of Lawrence himself.
Understood. Coming to you in
20
seconds.
Okay.
What about the epic struggle for survival and all that?
This could be the greatest event in live television, and I must insist on silence. That's if you want a big, fat bonus, huh? What do you say, Skipper?
Lester, shove that cotton-picking banjo and keep your mouth shut.
You'll be on air in 5 seconds from now. 4, 3, 2, 1.
This is Morris Spencer coming to you live from the Sea of Thirst, Earthside, the Moon. The points of light you see on the right of your screens is Chief Engineer Lawrence and his gallant crew of rescuers. The probe sticking starkly from the surface of the sea is the only link 22 people entombed in the dust cruiser Cellini have with the rest of humanity. I'm going to leave the man in charge of the rescue, Chief Engineer Lawrence, to describe his plans to bring the 22 people to the surface, as he is in direct contact with Captain Pat Harris of the stricken craft. I'll leave the hellish conditions down there to your imagination. It's very hot, and there is a serious buildup of carbon dioxide. Let us pray to our own God that Lawrence can get them out of there in time. The next voice you hear will be that of Lawrence himself.
Uh-oh. We got big trouble, Mr. Spencer. I have Tourist Commissioner Davies on a priority channel.
Hell. Okay, I'll handle him, Skipper.
All right.
Hello, Commissioner Davies. How are you?
I don't know how you got there so quickly, Spencer, but you've got 1 minute to get off the air. Don't you have any sense of moral decency?
I'm just doing my job the best way I know how, Commissioner.
Off in 1 minute, or your channel loses its franchise.
Let's not get excited, Commissioner. What's the problem?
We have nothing to discuss, Spencer.
I've got one of the greatest news items in Moon history. That's what we've got to discuss. Now, calm down, Commissioner, and let's look at it from your point of view.
What the hell do you mean?
Strictly between us, Commissioner. Think positive, huh? What way can this tragedy benefit you and your department?
I don't think I follow you.
You must be going through a pretty hard time, huh? Tourist bus with 22 people incarcerated. It doesn't look too bright for the future, does it?
What are you getting at?
I think we could be men who understand each other. You could break me and my station, but in the minute I take to get off the air, I could break you.
Are you threatening me?
Damned right I am. But I'm also offering you a deal.
I don't have to take this from you.
Commissioner, I have an audience of 200 million people and rising by the minute. I could tell them what a job you've done here on the moon, what tourism is like here and what it could be. I could have your hotels and pleasure domes overflowing. We've got the solar system sat on the edge of their seats, Commissioner. What do you say?
We're here, Pat, right above you. Would you believe there's a spaceship just on the ledge in the mountains waiting for all of you to come out and take your photographs?
Well, must remember to comb my hair. Why didn't you land there and save time?
Wouldn't have saved time, Pat.
The ledge is too high, and there are too many rocks to climb. We'd have spent longer getting our equipment down from there and across the sea. How are you?
Max giving oxygen to Mrs. Schuster. She's in a bad way. Seems to be getting foggy in here. Or is it just me?
We're ready to drill now.
I think the bottle's nearly empty, though.
We're on our way. The first section's 5 meters down. Hang on.
Yeah, I'll just have a sleep until you come in.
No, Pat. No, keep awake. Talk to me. How's Mac?
Who?
Mackenzie. Is he awake?
Why is it so foggy in here? I've only seen fog on videos.
God damn it, Ed. We should have made the drill detachable from the surface. He isn't going to have the strength. We had to risk it. There wasn't time to improve it. It's there. We've hit the roof. Pat, do you hear that? The first pipe is there. Can you hear it?
Yeah, I heard you. You're on the roof.
Listen very carefully. You're seconds away from fresh air, but this is very, very important. We will bang it a couple of times, and you have to tell us if it is clear of the circuitry. Do you understand? Pat.
Go ahead.
Is that clear?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Start the drill. We've got to risk it now. Pat, listen. This is very important. Your pressure down there is greater than up here on the surface. Do not undo the bit until we tell you, or air will escape up the pipe. Do you understand that? Do not undo the bit. We didn't have time to fit a non-return valve. We're through, Chief.
Mark! Mark, it's through! It's through!
Thank God. Coleman, Matsui, help George with the oxygen line. Chief! I think he's undoing the bit! Pat! Pat! Captain Harris! Do not, I mean, do not disconnect the bit until I tell you! It's too late! He's going to pull a vacuum! Quickly.
Commissioner Davies, there's a huge jet of mist or something, like a geyser shooting up in the air.
Yes, I can see it on my set.
I must comment on it to my viewers.
Is that agreed then, Mr. Spencer?
Yes, Commissioner. It's been a pleasure doing business with you.
If that geyser means they're all dead, I still want the same arrangement. Is that agreed?
Of course.
And no comments at all from Lawrence?
That's already been actioned. We can all benefit from this, Commissioner.
Pat? Pat? Are you all right?
I put a book over the end of the pipe. The air was going out instead of in. It's gotten very dark in here.
You had us all scared there for a moment, Pat. Everything's going to be all right. Okay, George. Pat, we're going to blast that book away with the sweetest smelling oxygen you've ever known.
That's fantastic, Chief. Mac, come and lie over by the pipe. Mac, you okay?
Yeah, I'm all right. I'm all right. Why is it so dark?
They got through to us. The main lights are out.
I went asleep.
No, it doesn't matter. They aren't all breathing properly. Can you give artificial respiration?
Yeah, sure. Mrs. Schuster's a strange color.
Oh, do what you can.
How's it going down there?
Hang on. Give us a few minutes. We've got to give some artificial respiration.
Mrs. Schuster's breathing.
Yeah, I think we might make it.
We're giving you oxygen at the lowest temperature we think is safe, so don't be alarmed. When we've cooled you down, let us know.
How are they, Mac?
Are they? They're all alive up to now.
I think we're going to be all right.
Pat, in about 5 minutes, we'll be sinking the second pipe. We'll bang on the roof again to make sure we are clear of your controls. It's looking good, Pat.
As you can see through the transparent dome that encases the rescuers, the first stage, dropping an independent oxygen supply to the stricken Cellini, has now been completed. Another pipe, a vent pipe, is now being lowered by Chief Engineer Lawrence and his crew to complete the respiratory circuit. As the rescue continues to unfold, live on this channel, I cannot help, even with a lump in my throat, thanking the good Lord for granting us people like Chief Engineer Lawrence, working under the leadership of Tourist Commissioner Rex Davis. I've tried repeatedly to talk to the Commissioner on the air, but he won't budge from his single-minded task of getting these people out alive and well. Perhaps he'll speak to us later.
You're through, Chief.
Okay, Pat. Now unscrew the bit, and then you can relax just a little. Is there anything you require urgently?
No, I don't think so. I'm going to get the main lights back on before they all wake up.
Fine. Our igloo above you is being pressurized now, so that should make our work a little more comfortable and avoid the danger of any more air escaping. Once you're out of there, we'll ferry you back to Bates in fours or fives, after a preliminary check by medics. What the hell was that?
It was just a sneeze. It's getting quite cool down here now.
All right, we'll put the oxygen temperature back to normal. The ski boat from Farside is just arriving. Nearly there, Pat.
Okay. Breathe deep, everyone. We have fresh air again.
Pat, how are we doing?
Oh, so far, so good, Commodore. Breathe deep. I'm just unscrewing the bed pipe.
Yeah.
Come on, Sue. Wake up. Breathe. Enjoy the oxygen.
Oh, Pat. Oh, it's so cold.
We're going to be all right.
What's happened?
They got through to us, no? Professor. Oh. Breathe.
Oh,
that's great.
Thank God.
My goodness.
That's much better.
Make sure anyone who's still asleep is breathing normally and keep them warm.
I'll do a tour of inspection.
Good girl.
Oh, that air.
You okay, Mac?
Yeah, terrific. Mrs. Schuster, you had me worried for a while.
Good to see you, Mr. McKenzie. Irving, you're sleeping in.
It's a vacation, Myra. You sure you're all right?
I'm fine. Did I snore, Mr. McKenzie?
Myra, 40 years married. You still amaze me.
I'll get the main lights back on. Just relax.
All right.
How did he propose to get us out, Pat?
I think you'd better ask Chief Engineer Lawrence, Commodore. Come under the bridge with me.
What's happening anyway?
Pat.
Yes, Chief.
We've stabilized pressures now. We'll have to give you a boost now and again, but most of the time the pipes will be open-ended.
Great. I'd like to introduce Commodore Hanstein to you.
Very pleased to talk to you, Chief. Thanks for the fresh air.
My pleasure, Commodore.
What's the plan to get us out, Chief?
At the moment, we've just rigged up an igloo above you. That means we don't have to work in spacesuits. And when you come up, you'll be in a pressurized atmosphere. We're going to use a large sectional cylinder that'll sink under its own weight. We've more than enough sections to reach you, and the pressure of the tube will make the seal. Then we'll have a sort of well shaft down to you, and I have the dubious honor of cutting through Cellini's roof.
That sounds straightforward enough.
We're starting now. The sections are sealed with a rather flimsy material that stops the dust coming up, but won't stop me getting down.
We seem to be in capable hands, Pat.
Yes, I think we are.
Oh, you look tired, Pat.
Well, I feel it. Mackenzie was a great help. Is everybody all right?
They've all come through it very well.
We're down more than 8 meters, more than halfway.
Pat.
Yeah, ma'am?
How far down was the oxygen pipe when it first entered the cabin?
About a meter.
Take a look now.
I see what you mean. Chief, have you pulled the vent pipes up at all?
No, there's been no need.
We're still sinking. The dust must never have settled.
We're within half a meter of you. Almost there.
When that tube hits us, it might shove us down.
Lawrence, we're still sinking. You'll have to give us more airline and make it quick.
What the hell's that? The suction pump from Sleaze out of the ship and in the dust. We're pulling dust. Switch it out.
Selene, what's happening?
Had the rear pipes out, dust spraying in, and we're tilting. The airline's out, dust's coming in from both.
Did you get that?
Yes, okay. Those pipes out,
you bits of the airport. Keep your head down, it's easier than you. Myra, can you listen?
I can't breathe, it's so dark. The dust is floating up.
Now we must jam the holes. Use my shirt. Commodore, will you block the other one, please?
I can't see, my eyes are full of dust.
Now hang on, I'm coming your way.
The knife is still on, it's the dust.
You all right, Commodore?
I've managed to jam the hole, I think, but I can't see a thing. My eyes are clogged up with the dust.
Pat, they drilled again, but it's gone into the British control panel.
Lawrence, can you hear me?
Yes, Pat, what the hell is going on?
You've drilled into the control panel. Take it up and come rear a meter. Everybody stay calm. Cover your mouths and noses up with clothing.
Right, we're trying again.
Yes, go ahead. Mac, be ready to detach the bed.
Right.
Yeah, you're true to us.
Good. At least you've got oxygen. All right, now let's get that cylinder down to the roof. Come on, uneven keel. Once you're properly now. Get it down.
Pack the bit.
Okay.
They better get
it. I'm tying a rope around my ankle.
Okay, could you be quiet, please? Be quiet, everyone, please. We have to listen to this. Shush.
I'll cut a hole in the hole, then you pull me up again. Then drop the rope ladder.
It's too risky, Chief. It won't seal. You might get stuck. If the Selene sinks anymore, you're drowning in the dust.
Shut up, Ed. I can't think of anything else. Put the power under the grinder. George, give me a hand with the rope. I'm
laying
down, right?
Bits off, Pat. We have air again.
Good. Stand back, they're cutting through.
Captain, the dust is more than a meter deep in this end.
It's pouring into the bridge.
I'm through. Keep that damn rope tight, Ed. I don't want to drop in. Pull me up. Pull me up. Dust pouring in. I'm choking.
I think the bridge is beginning to smolder.
That's where they drilled into the panel. Close the door. If we get a spark, we could explode.
Pull me up, Ed. Get me out.
Oh, my God.
Chief, the bridge has exploded.
Hey. It's coming down to you.
You see the ladder there?
Dust in my eyes. I can't see a thing, Ed. I'm really tired by our
keys. There's the ladder. Now quickly, start climbing. Come on, next, quickly.
Help me, I'm stuck in the dust.
Help me, madam. Someone help, please. Are we getting up?
Max, quickly.
Hold on tight, Commodore, I'll get you out.
The bridge door isn't going to hold.
How many people are out, sir?
11, halfway there.
Keep it moving, eh? Come on, Myra. Get up there.
I'm not leaving you, Harvey. I'll get stung.
Put her up. She can climb.
Harvey.
Goodbye, Myra. What's happened? I can't see.
The bridge door's gone. There's a tidal wave of dust from the bridge.
Hey, grab that hand quickly. Someone's got it.
Okay.
Come on.
Come on,
Miss Morley. I've got
come
you.
On, yeah. Come on, darling.
Have any more?
It's just the four of us. If anybody's buried, they're lost.
You next, Commodore.
If Sue's still here, she should go.
Get up there and don't waste time.
Oh,
you next, Sue.
That's Quinky with the girl.
Go, Mac.
Hang on to the ladder, Pat, or you'll go under.
Don't worry about me. I'll be okay.
There's just the captain left. Drag him up. Drag him up.
Come on,
then. Oh, we'll lose him.
Go. He's coming up.
Oh,
are you all right, Pat?
Welcome aboard, Pat. Lawrence here.
I can't open my eyes, Chief, but... It's good to hear you.
I can't see you either, but the medics are just arriving. Make them comfortable, Ed.
You did a great job, Lodge.
I've never been so frightened in all my life. Thought for a moment I was going to join you.
Oh, what the hell caused in the first place?
Moonquake. A chance in a million.
And I always thought I had a nice, safe job.
Confirmation has just arrived that all 22 passengers and crew buried in the dust cruiser Cellini have been rescued unharmed by Chief Engineer Lawrence and the team put together by Tourist Commissioner Davis. They're all alive and well. After a chance in a million moondust fall, the rescue operation has been a total success. And we now have a live interview with the man responsible for all tourism on the moon, Rex Davis. Commissioner.
Please, call me Rex. I must apologize for not speaking to you earlier, but I had other things on my mind. Even though I had 100% confidence in Jim Lawrence and his crew, I felt it my overriding responsibility to be on hand at all times.
We understand, Rex. Was there ever a time when you thought they may be lost?
No, not for a second. If this mishap has taught us anything, it's that the personnel on the moon are equipped to deal with any emergency. And as man becomes even more adventurous, we will be tested again and again, and again and again we will prove ourselves equal to the task. Why, even now, there's a man who wants to pioneer dust skiing as a sport.
Do you mean like water skiing?
Exactly. Out there, on the Sea of Thirst. Isn't that an exciting prospect?
It is indeed, Rex. I see, as we speak, more of the team of highly trained medics are arriving at the rescue point, just as planned. When do you think the passengers and crew will be available for interview, Rex?
Oh, now, Morris, we don't want to rush these people. Let's give them a chance to experience some lunar hospitality, all courtesy of the tourist board, of course.
Well, I think you know best, Rex. Who is this enterprising man who wants to pioneer dust skiing?
He's an Australian champion. And I have high hopes that he will be only the first of many who will wish to visit the Sea of Thirst. Who knows? It could even become the moon's main recreation center.
Good night. See you next time.